Money 105.5 presents Money 2.0.
Money 2.0.
Now, from Rogerson Business Services, certified business broker Andrew Rogerson on Money 2.0.
Good morning. Welcome to 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. I'm the host of the show, Andrew Rogerson, and I hope you had a great Labor Day weekend. I have two guests this morning. My first guest is a gentleman called Reg Carter, and my second guest is Terry Flanagan. Reg is the senior partner of Carter Sartain. They're here in Sacramento, and his company specializes in advertising, marketing, and PR programs. So we thought to get some scoops today from Reg, how to grow your business by doing some constructive marketing and PR work, etc. So Reg will be my first guest when we get the show going shortly. My second guest, Terry Flanagan. Terry's in Chicago and actually in the process of relocating to Florida for half the year. But Terry's a certified appraiser, and he specializes in doing medical valuation. So I thought it'd be interesting to have Terry come on and talk about the purpose of evaluation. And he specializes in doing medical valuation. So a lot of businesses have a specialization, and Terry's involved in doing medical valuations. That's what he does. He was a chiropractor for many years, so he's well versed in the medical industry. So I thought we'd talk to Terry about medical valuations and how to apply some specialties to valuations when that need comes up. So those are my two guests this morning. If you're out and about and listening and you think, hey, there's some interesting information here, I'd like to go back and hear the show again, you're welcome to visit my website, www.rogersonbusinessservices.com, where I'll have a copy of the show up on my website, and you're welcome to download that and listen to it at your leisure. Probably there later on this afternoon or tomorrow morning. So if you need the show, it's up there, ready, available. All the shows are there, actually. So if you're listening and you want to go back to previous shows, we've been doing this since beginning of February. Each show is recorded and each show is available. So there's a bunch of interesting topics and some intriguing guests. So welcome to visit my website, www.rogersonbusinessservices.com. And there's a tab on the top there. It says Media. If you click on the media tab, a little drop-down comes up and you'll see 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. Just click on that and it'll take you to a summary of all the shows that have been recorded. So what's this show about? This show is for business owners or those dreaming of becoming a business owner and looking for more information. We cover topics that include the spectrum of selling a business, buying a business, or buying a franchise. And these topics include finance, legal issues, tax, accounting, as well as sales and marketing, which is the sales and marketing is Reg's area of expertise we're talking to Reg about this morning. Or as I say, this show is where Wall Street meets Main Street. My name is Andrew Rogerson. I'm a certified business broker and host of your show. I'm certified with the California Association of Business Brokers. I'm also certified with the International Business Brokers Association. I'm the author of four books, Successfully Start Your Business, Successfully Buy Your Business, Successfully Buy Your Franchise, and Successfully Sell Your Business. If you need more information, again, welcome to visit my website. The books are available on my website. You can download them, $19.95, and they're available from www.rogersonbusinessservices.com. Just go to the website and you'll see the link to the page with information about each of the books. If you have questions, you're welcome to give me a call. Don't give me a call right now. Be available after 11 o'clock, 916-570-2674. So again, if you're welcome to give me a call, 916-570-2674. Each week I do a blog. I like to write about what I do in my industry and in particular in my business. I've got a blog up there. If you're thinking of selling your business and somebody talks to you about seller finance, I actually wrote a blog on 26 seller finance options when selling a business. So it's on my blog, and if somebody's thinking of selling and seller finance may be a requirement, there's 26 different seller finance options available. So if you want some more information, you're welcome to go to my blog and look at the blog I wrote, 26 seller finance options when selling a business. So my first guest is Reg Carter. Reg is a marketing guy, and Reg, have I got you here?
Hello, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks for having me.
No, great. So Reg is involved in the marketing business. Tell me a little bit about what you do, just at a simple level. What is the company you work for? It's called Carter Sartain?
Yes, we're Carter Sartain is a full service advertising, marketing, and public relations firm that my partner and I started back in 2009. So this is our fourth year in business. So we're very proud of that. We originally started the business to make big agency advertising, marketing, public relations services available to, we used to call them small businesses, but right. We prefer to call them growing businesses because we all had to start somewhere.
Sure.
Regardless of the size. So by using our services, the business owners can focus on growing their business
right.
instead of trying to worry about the marketing.
Right. And you're a local Northern Californian?
Absolutely. Wouldn't have it any other way. I'm one of the few in the proud. I grew up here actually pretty close by to Sacramento and lived here for most of my life before heading off into the world.
And you're a graduate from UC Davis. My oldest daughter is also a graduate from UC Davis. I know you went to UC Davis.
I went there back during, I don't know if any of your listeners remember Ken O'Brien back in those days. I was one of the linemen protecting our quarterback Ken O'Brien, who had a short career in the NFL, but it was a career nonetheless. So I played with Ken O'Brien and Bo Eason right. for the UC Davis Aggies. Very proud of that.
And the degree you did at UC Davis was a marketing degree?
Yeah. I got a degree in, we didn't have marketing at UC Davis at the time. So okay. got a degree in design
okay.
with a minor in communication. So it was, I looked at that as kind of a makeshift marketing degree.
Okay.
That wasn't quite enough in order to get into the field, which I really wanted to do, which was advertising. So right. I went away to grad school a few years later.
And you went to Chicago to go to grad school, is that right?
Yeah, that was always my dream, was to live in the Midwest and to go to Northwestern when I was a kid in high school.
Right.
Working on the newspaper and for on the yearbook. Northwestern was the measuring stick. They were the yardstick by which all the other schools were judged, and I wanted to go away there, and it just so happens that many, many years later, ended up going there, but instead of for journalism, going for marketing. So I got my master's degree from Northwestern.
So one of the many things I like about Reg is that on his way back from Chicago, he got lost. He was heading back to Northern California, and not only did he get lost, he got lost badly because he ended up down in Australia. So how the heck you get from Chicago to Australia on your way to Chicago to Northern California?
Yeah,
there must be a story in there somewhere, I think.
Well, it's a long story, but to make it interesting, no, I actually, once I got back here from Chicago, I spent many years with J. Walter Thompson on the fabulous Miracle Mile in Chicago, which I just love. People say that the winters in Chicago are tough, but right. The summers are even worse.
Right,
but loved it there, but. After many years with J. Walter Thompson, came back to Northern California and decided to take a vacation and go to Australia and ended up never coming back. Well, came back five years later.
Yeah, five years later. Yeah, that's quite some vacation.
Yeah, and, it was fun.
What's intriguing is where Reg lived in Australia, he lived where my mum lives in a suburb called Templestowe. So not only did Reg make it to Australia, but he made it to a better part of Australia, which is where I grew up. I grew up in Doncaster, which is right next to Templestowe. So I've got many, many conversations with Reg about the area and some of the things he did down there. So you work for a HR company in Australia called Drake. I think they're called Drake Staffing or Drake Personnel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Drake Personnel, and worked in their marketing department for many years.
Yep,
and got to travel all around Australia, which was just fantastic. The only place I didn't get to Western Australia,
right,
and I didn't get to Tasmania. So okay. I've had the chocolate though from Tasmania, and I have to say that was. If you have a Hershey's chocolate bar compared to the chocolate that they get from Tasmania with the sheep's milk,
yep.
It's unbelievable. Yep. There's just no contest.
We have some good food down there. We've got a pretty clean environment down there. So our dairy industry is important and our produce is very important to us. So you're making my mouth water just thinking about some of that. So I need to change subjects. But tell me, what was the initial attraction to doing advertising and marketing? What was the attraction to get you in that industry?
Yeah, well, you know, interestingly, it was ever since I was a little kid. I've always been a TV junkie, and not so much today because there's really nothing on. But when I was a little kid, that's when all the good shows were on. The television was at its heyday, And my favorite shows growing up, one of them was Bewitched. And
yes.
I watched Darren Stevens and saw what he did and thought, my goodness, people pay him for making things up. I want that job.
Sure.
And so that was kind of my the genesis of my wanting to be in advertising. Plus, the commercials then were just so interesting. You had Charlie the Tuna, the Jolly Green Giant, you know, both of those Leo Burnett inventions. But just that was when advertising was really at its peak. And I'd like to bring that back.
Sure. It's interesting. You say a word like Bewitched, and you immediately trigger a thought in my head, Elizabeth Montgomery, because I used to grow up in Australia watching TV and watching Watch Bewitched was part of that that process. So, Reg, we're going to take a break. My guest this morning is Reg Carter from Carter Sartain. We're talking about marketing. When we come back from break, I've got some more questions about Reg on what he's doing in the marketing world. Back from break shortly.
Money 2.0 is sponsored by Rogerson Business Services.
Call Money 1055 at 866-576-1055 and get your questions answered in real time right now on Money 2.0.
Control, we can see socks for miles.
I'm sorry, Lunar One, did you say socks?
Miles and miles of socks.
Like we wear on our feet.
Roger, Control, the socks appear to cover the entire dark side of the moon.
In pairs?
No, just random socks and giant, fierce mountains of dryer lint.
The search is over! Yeah!
There are some things you can search for and never ever find, but when it comes to finding a local job, SacramentoHelpWanted.com has made the search super easy and free.
Do you see any purple argyle?
Search by keywords or phrases to find hundreds of jobs in accounting, HR, recruiting, retail, or healthcare or IT, and post your resume in minutes.
Lots of tube socks and a holy cow, there is a river of knee-highs.
I guess the search is over. Check us out. We're SacramentoHelpWanted.com. Long name, amazing results.
Are you sure you don't see any purple argyles?
Are you a business owner or entrepreneur at heart? I am too. I'm Andrew Rogerson, a local business broker and host of Money 2.0. Listen live Tuesdays at 10 on Money 105.5 FM. Let's talk about how you can successfully run your business.
Tune in to Money 2.0 with Andrew Rogerson, certified business broker and author of 4 books, Successfully Start Your Business, Buy Your Business, Buy Your Franchise, and Successfully Sell Your Business. Hear Andrew Rogerson on Money 2.0 live, 10 a.m. Tuesdays, right here on Money 105.5 FM.
Money experts, every morning at 10 on Money 2.0. Now, back to the host, Andrew Rogerson.
Welcome back, and thank you for listening to 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. I'm the host of the show, Andrew Rogerson. My guest is Reg Carter, and Reg is with a company called Carter Sartain, and they specialize in doing advertising, marketing, and PR. So, Reg, just at 50,000 foot, you mentioned Carter Sartain started in 2009. What's some of the focus you do with your marketing? Do you have a particular thing you focus on, or do you have some clients that you've helped? Tell us a couple of the success stories you've had with some of the clients you've helped.
Yeah, no, people have always ask us that. Do we have any specialties? And we're really a generalist advertising firm. So one of our clients is a restaurant group in the East Bay. They consider themselves a mom and pop, but they have 6 restaurants now, the 5 in the East Bay and 1 in Napa, and they're moving towards a corporate structure, and we'd love to see them open one in Las Vegas and start a true chain. But we actually, earlier this year, helped them to negotiate terms with the Food Network. We can actually say that now. On a show called Chef Wanted with Ann Burrell.
Okay.
So it'll be they will be featured on the episode this coming Thursday at 7 or 10 p.m., depending on your television provider, whether you have satellite or cable. But their restaurant, the Pear Southern Bistro, will be on that show, and we're very, very proud of that. So that's a big one for us because it's national exposure for the client. But we had a client last year who's a financial advisor, Michelle Perry Higgins, who came to us and said that she wanted to also become a nationally known financial advisor, financial planner like Dave Ramsey or Susie Orman. And we said, sure, we can do that. And we didn't know how at the time, but we, through our public relations efforts, we actually have gotten her a regular column in the Wall Street Journal. So she's a columnist there on the financial experts panel.
Right.
And she has also been published in several, you know, national media publications. So we're very proud of that.
Yep. They're two great success stories. My wife's a huge fan of Food Network, and she watches all their shows, watches Anne Burrell, so I know exactly what you're talking about. And the success having somebody get published in the Wall Street Journal, that's tremendous. How do you, if a client gives you a call and says, hey, I'm thinking of doing, how do you, it seems so broad. Is it as simple as that? A client picking up the phone and saying, hey, I'm thinking of doing, can you help me? Is that the start of a conversation?
Well, you know, we like to think of ourselves as creative people in the advertising and marketing world. But for us, it starts with a strategy, because everything that we do is strategically led rather than creatively. If you've got a really big budget, then to have a great creative idea and go that way and take a chance, take a gamble, is certainly that's a viable way. Nike's been very successful with that.
Right.
But they've got very deep pockets. But
right.
for the average business owner, for the small or growing business,
yep.
they need to be more strategically led, because they have to be more careful about their dollars. So when a client comes to us with an idea, we're able to creatively, strategically look at how we can best make that idea come to life.
And maybe I'm getting too deep into this, but how would you do that? You typically put together, is it a questionnaire that you'd have them start with and fill out to get a feel for who they are and what they are and how you can help? Is that, what just at a simple level, what would your process be?
Yeah, when we first start off with a client, we really want to know what their goals are. Not just from a basic, you know, what do you want? Where do you want to be in 5 years? Where do you want your business to be? But really, what sort of a lasting legacy do you want to leave on the world? Our client, the restaurant client that we have in the East Bay, he wants to leave a legacy for his kids, so that, you know, they can look back and say, you know, hey, my dad did that. That was my dad that planted that flag.
One of the things I know you're involved with, it's called the $50,000 Marketing Makeover. And Reg and I are both involved in a local networking group called Ulink. And Jim Pelly and Adam Frick are the leaders of Ulink. And Reg and I had a casual conversation at a networking group. But the $50,000 Marketing Makeover, what's that about? Just give us a sense for what that's about.
Yeah, well, it's really exciting, and it's designed to, I mean, it's a competition, and it's designed to give one lucky business owner, one lucky business, the services of an entire marketing team for an entire year. So for them, it would be like having a virtual marketing department at their disposal.
So that sounds pretty impressive. If you're offering somebody $50,000 in marketing help, that sounds tremendous. So what's there's some different companies involved in this activity you're putting together?
Yeah, there's more than a dozen, and I can tell you what they all do. I mean, it's a variety of services. There's web design, graphic design, search engine optimization, reputation management, video, public relations, advertising, strategic marketing, professional writing, mobile apps, printing, business coaching, email, social media, you name it. The list goes on and on.
Yep. It's totally, it sounds like you covered every aspect of a marketing campaign. You've got them all there.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's for the business that's chosen. And we kind of patterned it after a sort of a blend between American Idol and the Extreme Home Makeover, where the panel of judges will choose the top 10, and then those people, those businesses will post a video. We'll post a video on our website,
right.
And then the public will actually vote on who the winner is. So it's very exciting. It's a really unique concept. This is the first year that we're doing it,
right.
And we had a flood of applicants, and next year we expect even more.
Okay. So if I remember correctly, the applications have actually closed off the 31st of August?
They closed on August 30th, August 30th. The winners, the top 10, will be notified next week, and then they'll have a week to put their videos together, and those will go up, and we can't wait to see what happens.
Yep, and then the judging will take place on those videos? Is that
correct. The objective is, we have lots of media partners that are following this, you know, radio like yourself and print and even some television, that they'll be following this throughout, so that the winning business will get a lot of publicity. But our goal is initially, at least for the top 10, for them to enlist their fans, their friends, their followers to go online and to vote for them and to build some real grassroots support.
And when does the winner announce? Is there a date for the winner?
The winner will be, I believe it's October 7th when the winner will actually be announced. So okay. Hold your breath for that one, because yeah, that exactly. Should be really exciting.
Yeah, no, that's a tremendous, and I just love the fact there's so many marketing people coming together to make this a success story. So that's fantastic. Tell me what are you seeing in the marketing? Marketing seems to me ever changing. So, you know, as a small business owner, one of my main things I have to do is get out there and do marketing. But whenever I seem to have, okay, this is a good idea, it seems to be that was a good idea 2 or 3 years ago, because marketing isn't my forte. What are you seeing happening in the marketing? You know, with marketing, how does a small business person approach having a valid marketing program?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. It is ever changing. It's a moving target. And like you say, if marketing's not your bailiwick,
right.
It's really hard to keep current on not only what the trends are and what your specific competition's doing, but what's going to be effective. And so that's where having a professional team on your side, one that's cost effective and strategic,
yep.
really comes into play.
Yep.
And so one of the things that we look at is how do you stay current, how do you stay relevant, and how do you get attention without positive attention? So without being negative, how do you get out and make a positive impact and gain the attention that you want,
right?
And still be seen as being credible. So that's our challenge. That's
yep.
what we do.
And staying positive is that a big thing? Because I'm seeing some companies, I think, making a deliberate effort sometimes to be provocative, as opposed to being negative. But they seem to be out there to attract attention.
Yes, absolutely. There was a Kraft ad that we posted on our Facebook page. So you can look us up on Facebook, facebook.com/CarterSartain. But there was a Kraft ad that was very suggestive with a very attractive Italian man. They were advertising Italian dressing, but compared to the double page spread, the actual Kraft label in the bottle for the Italian dressing was very, very small.
Right.
But because of all of the negative publicity surrounding this very suggestive campaign, I think Kraft sold a lot of Italian dressing because of that.
So it achieved the goal, even though the strategy may have been a little bit different than what they first planned. But
well, that may have been the strategy, all along. We don't really know, but it worked.
What's your view on social media? One of the things I wrestle with as a small business guy is, do I spend time and effort using social media? Do you think that's an effective place for a business person to spend their time? It depends on the company, I would think. But what's your thoughts on social media?
Well, certainly social media is a very good form of communication with your customers, with your client base, and even with prospective customers. But we say that social media is a conversation, and mass media is still how you get the conversation started. So whether you're talking about television, radio, print, or internet, you have to get your message out some way. And then migrate those customers over, those prospects over to social media, so that you can have that one-on-one conversation with them.
And the industry is changing, new technologies, new ways of doing things. That's just part and parcel of what's happening in business in general. And I would think it impacts the marketing and PR as well.
Absolutely, there's just a lot to stay current on,
right.
And that's why we like to bring on, you know, young interns, and we don't have them go out and get coffee and pick up dry cleaning, but they're actually doing research. They're actually bringing us new ideas, because these are the ones that are closest to those new technologies. So we bring our interns on, give them real work, and then we'd like to see them stay with us for years to come and to grow with our organization.
So I think you're in the process of looking for a new intern. Is that right? So if somebody's listening and has an interest in a young person, wants to get involved as an intern, they could have a conversation with you. Have I got that right?
Absolutely. If they give us a call, give a call into our office, and the receptionist there will be able to give them instructions on how to apply. We'd love to have a recent college graduate apply. And we're actually looking for two interns, and be for marketing and public relations. So if they give a call into our office, 916-563-7122,
yep.
and speak to the receptionist, and she'll be able to give you instructions.
Yeah, that's great. Reg, we're running out of time. Well, in fact, we've run out of time. My producer's waving her hands, telling me, Andrew, it's time for a break. So, Reg, thank you for being a guest this morning.
Thank you, Andrew.
I thought it was fun to talk about what we talked about, the $50,000 marketing makeover. I'm sure we're going to hear more about that. So, thanks for being a guest this morning. Appreciate you coming here.
Thanks, Andrew.
Okay, great. You're on 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. Time for a break. We'll be back shortly.
Money 2.0 is sponsored by Rogerson Business Services.
Call Money 1055 at 866-576-1055 and get your questions answered in real time right now on Money 2.0.
Manufacturing expands more than economists forecast. From Bloomberg World Headquarters in New York, I'm Donna Wilson. There are more signs of a renewal in manufacturing. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice reports.
An important gauge of factory activity rose to the highest in more than 2 years in August. The Institute for Supply Management's Manufacturing Index advanced to 55.7 last month, the strongest showing since June 2011. Factories are benefiting from demand for cars and trucks, as well as the recovery in the housing market. In another report, the Commerce Department says construction spending rose in July for the third time in 4 months. At the Bloomberg First Word Desk, I'm Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Radio.
And U.S. stocks paired gains as House Speaker John Boehner said he will support the president's call for action against Syria. The Dow lost 23 points to 14,787. S&P 500 index up 0.1% to 1635. And the Nasdaq is up 0.4%. That's a Bloomberg Market Minute.
Hi, everybody. This is Eric Ilofsky-McKay, host of Real Life Lending, every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. on Money 105.5. I know that you're all tired of mortgage company ads telling you how low their rates are. Well, I'm not going to quote a rate that very few folks will qualify for. What I will do is take the time to find the best loan program for you and your family. Whether your FICO is 800 or 600, I'll take the time to provide you real options based on your current financial situation. Let my 20-plus years of experience work for you. Essex Mortgage has been a direct lender for over 26 years, and the best part is that we make all lending decisions in-house because we are the bank. If you're looking to refinance or purchase using a conventional FHA or VA loan, give me a call. Work directly with me, Eric McKay at Essex Mortgage at 916-806-0606. That's 916-806-0606. And don't forget to call in with your questions to Real Life Lending every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. on Money 105.5.
Essex Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMLS 70377. DRE 996013. DOC 607-3343. Eric McKay. NMLS 288343.
You've waited for the next Doritos Locos Taco from Taco Bell, and I'm here to help you imagine it. So roll up the windows and kill the AC. Hot, right? That's what it's like to bite into the new fiery Doritos Locos Taco. But there's more. Imagine some limes riding shotgun. Weird, right? Yet they totally work with the heat. Delicious. Now you really know what the fiery Doritos Locos Taco is like. It's a little lime and a lot of fire. Live mas.
At participating locations made with lime flavor, Doritos is a trademark of Frito-Lay North America, Inc. 2013.
There are leaf blowers. And then there are fuel-injected luxury leaf blowers. The Lincoln Certified Pre-Owned Autumn Event. Now get 0.9% APR, plus the confidence of a 6-year, 100,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Lincoln Certified Pre-Owned. Luxurious by any standards. Certified by ours. APR varies by term. Not all buyers will qualify for Lincoln Automotive Financial Services Limited Term Financing. Take delivery from dealer stock by 9/30/13. See dealer for limited warranty and complete details.
Money experts. Every morning at 10. On Money 2.0. Now, back to the host, Andrew Rogerson.
Welcome back, and thank you for listening to 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. I'm the host of the show, Andrew Rogerson, and I have a guest lined up all the way from Chicago, and he specializes in doing medical valuations, and his name's Terry Flanagan. Terry, good morning.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for coming on and being a guest this morning. I literally called Terry about an hour ago because I had a guest lined up, and he wasn't able to make it. He had to go and see a doctor instead, which I kind of understand. Doctors are a little bit more important than being on my radio show. So Terry was good enough to accept my voicemail and say, "Yeah, Andrew, I'll come on. Let's see what mess we can make." So we're here to make a mess on medical valuation. So that's the strategy.
Okay. Well, the nice thing about being Irish is that you can talk for a while on a moment's notice.
So. No, it's very good. So we're talking about medical valuations in a little bit, but you've got an interesting background. You're we're talking about medical valuations because you've been involved in medicine for many years. What's your background? What have you been doing in the medical industry?
Well, actually, I started my working career as a chiropractor. I practiced 28 years in the Chicago area. And after, I don't know, 20 or 25 years, I was getting a little restless. My patient base, for some reason, probably my location more than anything, I had a lot of financial people as patients, so a lot of CPAs and a few valuation people. And as the conversation would develop, they realized I was searching for another career, and somebody started talking to me about business valuations. And while it doesn't seem to be a natural next step, in fact, the more I read about valuations and the deeper I got into the subject, I realized it was actually quite a bit similar to what I was doing as a physician. Businesses, if you look at them as living, breathing entities, which I think you should, basically you have the same approach. When a patient comes in, they've got an immediate concern, pain or something, and a business, we usually, if they need a valuation, will come in with an immediate concern. They want to buy, they want to sell, there's a divorce or a gift tax or something like that. And when you analyze, again, the patient, you want to look at the management that the patient has essentially been performing on themselves. Do they have diabetes? Are they overweight? Do they exercise? Things like that. Businesses are a little bit the same way. How does their balance sheet look? How is their income statement? Do they have... Are they using their financing wisely? And then you also have to look at long-term prognosis. And when you talk to the patient, what can they expect long-term? And when you write your valuation report, it's basically the same thing. You're telling the business, here's where you are, and here's what the industry data says, and this is what you can reasonably expect over a long-term horizon. So it seemed to make sense to me. That kind of led to training both with the National Association of Certified Valuation Analysts and with the Institute of Business Appraisers, and got credentialing through those two agencies, and just started doing valuation. I think, again, because of my background, it was more prone towards medical, but over the years have been able to do a variety of businesses, and each one is a learning experience, and the research that's done is good, and it's just I'm just thrilled that the patient had enough. I'm not sure what we would call it, common sense or courtesy to direct me in this manner. To the business valuation. That'll teach you to ask an Irishman an easy question because you're probably going to get a long answer.
No, that's good. No, I like long answers because that's good, and it's full of information as well. So as you were talking, I was making notes. So Terry and I are both part of a company in Colorado called Medical Practice Brokers, and we specialize in selling medical practice. In California, you're required to have a real estate license if you sell a business or a practice, and so I'm the representative in California for Medical Practice Brokers, and Terry's tucked away in Chicago, but he's also in the process of relocating to Florida for half the year, so he wants to escape from the cold Chicago winters, which doesn't surprise me. So he's in the process of finding a home in Florida. So one of the things that Terry and I do, though, in our specialization of doing medical practices, is that that the first place we start when we're talking to somebody who wants to sell a medical practice is to put a valuation together. So Terry, just at a simple level, what are some of the things you look for? What are the documents you need to put a valuation together?
With medical, business is a business. Medical is a little bit different because of the regulation, obviously, but you're still looking for the basic financial documents that a business has. Tax returns basically give you an idea of how the business has been operated over the last few years. Profit and loss statements are certainly good. The balance sheet also gives you another indication of how the practice of the business has been run. I really don't get into cash flow statements all that much. Some physicians have a need for a cash flow statement, but when you're selling a practice, that's usually not attached to it. So the primary documents are going to be the income statement and/or tax returns and the balance sheet. The other thing that we want is the operational characteristics of the practice. Each specialty is a little bit different as the patient base that they're looking for, the treatment that's offered, how the practice runs. Some practices are very dependent on referrals, surgical practices, basically, you know, referrals from a physician base. Other practices are very dependent on referrals from either insurance companies or other PPO, HMO, or from other patients. They've gone to Dr. Smith, and they like what Dr. Smith does. And this is all information we need to find out, because when we're looking at valuing the practice, what we're essentially saying is, okay, how much is it actually worth as a standalone business? If another doctor came in, how could they do that? So in calculating, the income is the income, and we have to recalculate that into the future. You know, will the patient stay with the next doctor? And the answer is generally yes. The other approach is, will the referral sources stay? And that, again, depends on the physician. Some practices are okay. They have very high enterprise recognition. A good example of that is Mayo Clinic. Most people go to Mayo Clinic and are really not sure which doctor they're going to see. Other doctors have a very high personal referral value. If you're a baseball fan, James McAndrews is a common name. He does a lot of elbow and shoulder surgeries on pitchers. And of course, the value is with him. If he leaves, the next doctor doesn't have his imprint, and the value of the practice is going to vary there. So, again, it's the same with any business. You want the operational background of the business, and you want the financial picture of the business. And then you just put it together in a report for the physician and come to a value.
And so one of the things of interest that I find, because I do evaluations as well, is that you do want to know the particular industry that the business is being appraised for, because even though it might be in the medical industry, and again, this applies to general business as well, different businesses in different industries sell for different amounts, or they're valued at different amounts because they have a specialization. For example, even though a dental practice or a pediatric practice or a primary care, urgent care, a chiropractor, they're all in the medical field, but each of those different disciplines and more, they'll have their own set of characteristics and their own values. So that's one of the intriguing things that I've learned, the last few years of doing medical evaluations, is that each discipline has its own characteristics and its own value.
Well, it does, and then when you add in regulation to the mix and Medicare reimbursement rates to the mix, and then basically Obamacare to the mix, and the changes this is going to bring. And the hard part is with Obamacare, I don't think it's really, the future is very hard to predict. And I don't think anybody really has an accurate outcome of Obamacare. But as it starts to play out, it looks better for some professions, and it looks like it may put a little squeeze on basically some of the high-end type of professions as far as reimbursement goes. Medicare is another one. You have a central payer like this. Medicare is usually the beta site for insurers. If Medicare reduces costs or reduces reimbursement in a certain area, you can be pretty certain that Blue Cross Blue Shield and United Healthcare and all the major insurers are going to follow Medicare's lead. So I think they go around, they identify a high volume, high cost procedures, and those are the ones they sort of focus on. Can we find a way to either reduce the volume or reduce the cost as a way of keeping Medicare down? Other subspecialties, the primary cares, I think are going to do better because with more insured patients, the thought is anyway that there'll be more access to primary care physicians, and they'll actually get busier and yet in return see their income go up a little bit.
Right.
Orthopedists, neurologists, maybe we're not sure yet, but there's some concern that, some of those procedures will be transferred to somebody else because of the reimbursement. So when you get to sort of these moving parts that other businesses don't have, It makes medical a little bit more of a specialty in the valuation side than your normal Main Street business.
Right. And an important component to what you do are your certifications. I know that your end product that you provide a client is a valuation, written report on the value of the business, and you have to defend the value you arrive at. And so your credibility is important when you're signing off on those documents. I know there are different certifications available. What are some of the certifications you've done and some of the associations that you're a member of?
I'm a member of three associations. I'm with the Institute of Business Appraisers, and they offer certification. When you go through there, they have a written exam, and then you have to present two prepared reports that go through peer review. And if they're found to be acceptable, that you understand what you're doing and the information is conveyed in an understandable manner, they grant what's called a Certified Business Appraiser, or CBA, designation. The second group is a group called NACVA, the National Association of Certified Valuation Analysts. They have a similar procedure. They have a written exam, and one report has to go through peer review with them. Again, if you found to meet their criteria, they will award a degree. The third group that I belong to is the American Society of Appraisers. And actually, I'm in the certification process for them at this point. All three of these organizations bring different qualities. I think ASA, American Society of Appraisers, is a very highly technical group, probably aimed more at the larger publicly traded companies, mergers, acquisitions, that sort of thing. AOL, Time Warner merges. Where you've got a lot, your stock, you've got different levels of stockholders, and the bigger, 125 million and up companies. NACVA, I think, more in the middle. If we call it middle market, now that line keeps moving, but somewhere in the 15 million to 50 million range. And the Institute of Business Appraisers, more small business, Main Street business, smaller businesses down the road.
Here, I'm going to jump in there. It's time for a break. We'll be back from break shortly. You're on 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. Back shortly.
Money 2.0 is sponsored by Rogerson Business Services.
Call Money 105.5 at 866-576-1055 and get your questions answered in real time right now on Money 2.0.
Are you a business owner or entrepreneur at heart? I am too. I'm Andrew Rogerson, a local business broker and host of Money 2.0. Listen live Tuesdays at 10 on Money 105.5 FM. Let's talk about how you can successfully run your business.
Tune in to Money 2.0 with Andrew Rogerson, certified business broker and author of four books, Successfully Start Your Business, Buy Your Business, Buy Your Franchise, and Successfully Sell Your Business. Hear Andrew Rogerson on Money 2.0 live 10 a.m. Tuesdays right here on Money 105.5 FM.
Money experts, every morning at 10 on Money 2.0. Now, back to the host, Andrew Rogerson.
Welcome back, and thank you for listening to 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. I'm the host of the show, Andrew Rogerson, and my guest all the way from Chicago is Terry Funnigan. And Terry's a certified business appraiser, specializes in doing medical valuations. And before the break, we were talking about the certifications that Terry's got. But Terry, one of the reasons we get to do evaluations is to help somebody sell their business or sell their practice, but they also hire us for other reasons. And I thought it'd be interesting just to just talk quickly on some of the different reasons that we get hired to do valuations. For example, people may be surprised, but if a doctor's in a divorce, often they need to bring an appraiser in to appraise the practice as part of a divorce settlement. It's one of the areas that you do valuations for.
Divorce is one. I think buying or selling is probably the largest area that people want evaluation. They want to know how much should I pay or how much should I ask. But divorce is also one. It's and again that varies by state by state. But if the business is part of the marital assets, the court is going to want to know what is the value of the business so they can make an equal distribution of the assets. Gift taxing is another reason. A parent, gifting shares to a child, either through a trust or directly to the child. The government certainly wants to know what that's worth. And so that you have to tell the valuation depending on who the reader is going to be. In this case, probably the IRS.
Right.
SBA loans also require valuation over $250,000. So the SBA, the government is basically leading this, as far as the credentialing being important. They've actually outlined in the standard operating procedure that evaluation has to be done by a credentialed valuation person. So they have some trust that, there's some training behind the valuation. Those are usually why valuations are done. There's another section of why they should be done. And unfortunately, I think we don't see this quite as often, but from a financial planning point of view or a strategic planning point of view, knowing what your business is worth really gives you quite a bit of information in that process. And, you know, sometimes when a business owner comes and he thinks it's worth X and he finds out it's worth 0.5X, well, that, you know, that, you want to learn early in the process. You know, the nice thing about a report is, one, it'll give you, you know, what's the financial value of the income stream. But it also benchmark your company against the industry, and it allows you to see, you know, where the weak spots are and start to plug them. So when you do go to market 2 years or 3 years down the road, you've started to repair the issues.
I laugh when you said that because, you know, I do valuations, I've mentioned, and I'm sure you have the same experience where you talk to people who own a business and you put a valuation together and you have to gingerly say, well, here's the valuation I'm seeing, and you're waiting for their reaction. And it happens too many times that the expectations of the business owner is the value, as you said before, you know, it's worth... with dollar X, but when it comes in at half a dollar X, there's obviously a huge deflation going on in their mind because they're just convinced their business was worth dollar X, and we've just come in, done a valuation, and supported our arguments with good data, and we're saying, well, it's only worth half what you're expecting. And I had the unfortunate experience of working with doing a valuation for a business owner who was wanting to sell it to his children. And he thought it was worth $1 million. And when I got all the tax returns, the P&L and the balance sheet together and put the report together, I came in at a value of $110,000. And it was very uncomfortable presenting the report to the owner because his expectation was worth $1 million. And he didn't have any real facts for the reason for the valuation, but he just thought that $1 million sounded a reasonable figure because he'd been owning the business for 20 years. And so therefore, you know, been around for 20 years, it's probably worth $1 million. So I'm sure you've had similar experiences.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. It's almost heartbreaking when you have to tell, you know, this guy's put his heart and soul in this thing for 20 years. And it's not that it's a bad business. It's just that the financial criteria and the benchmarking, you know, he's just running it a little bit, maybe a little bit differently than the industry is.
Right.
And an equity buyer, you know, somebody coming in to buy this is going to be looking at the industry data and have to fix some of the stuff themselves. So that's why I think that, you know, getting a report done a couple of years in advance, it should be part of the planning process. It's just heartbreaking when that happens. I guess a nice part of a well-written report, though, is when the owner gets it, and once they do... I guess calm down, you know, if you've shocked them a little bit. When they read the report, the report should flow very nicely from beginning to end. And when they get to the end, they should understand, you know, how the calculations were made, how the what the thought process was, where the information came from. You know, the valuation person wasn't just pulling a figure out of the air either. That
right.
It's actually built on good, solid documentation. And I think once my experience after you call back after they had a chance to read it, and I think they finally grasp, okay, you know, my expectation was something I made up.
Right.
How do I fix this? And then you can go into this is how you go about making your business better.
Yep.
And building it stronger. So when you do sell it 3 or 4 years from now, you might be able to get that $1 million.
Yep. So you made the comment about doing a business valuation for financial planning, and I think that's a great suggestion that I think a lot of business owners could benefit by doing that, especially if they're planning some sort of exit over the next 2 or 3 years, and if they have an idea of what the business is worth now. Again, we get caught with business owners that aren't always declaring all the sales or the income they get from the business. And so if somebody wants to sell a business, and I've got one right now where I'm working with a seller that he hasn't been reporting all the cash sales. So he has an expectation of what the business is worth, but the cash sales aren't reported on the tax returns, and the tax returns are the basis for the valuation. It's so important to do all those things.
Well, I usually, and that's come up too, you know, where they'll pull you aside and say, you know, there's so much cash. My comment is usually, you know, if you've done that, you've already pulled that value out of the business,
right?
You know, and you've already gotten value for that, and you can't charge a new buyer, you know, for something you've already spent, and that's usually they understand that. You know, it happens. It's not the best situation, but it does happen. And but you can't settle a debt, you know, and a buyer won't do that. You know, won't pay for that either. So
right. Terry, we're getting close to the top of the hour, which means the show is coming to a wind. I want to thank you for being involved. As I say, we're both involved with medical practice brokers. David Green is the principal. He lives in Colorado. And Terry, what you're servicing states in Illinois? What else? What other states you're doing?
I work in the Midwest and then sort of the Northeast corridor for some reason. I describe it as east of the Mississippi and north of the Ohio River. You know, I've done valuations for divorce and gift taxing and that through the Midwest and then Pennsylvania, Connecticut, New York. And all you mentioned Florida earlier. I'm also in Florida, and again, in Florida is similar to California, and you need a real estate license to do this sort of thing. So that's pretty much the Northeast and the far Southeast. That's me.
Terry, we're done. We're out of time. Thank you for being a guest this morning. You're on 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. Talk to you next week.